Members, I'm going to call the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration to order. The clerk will note the roll. The quorum is present. Representative Pawlowski moves the minutes for Thursday, March 26, 2009. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye. Those enthusiastically opposed? Motion prevails. Good morning, members. Monday, 9:30. Rise and shine. Here we go. First order of business on the agenda is the legal fees. Members, the House has a policy of paying legal fees and recounts, and we're gonna move to this second. We're actually gonna do the budget first, if we could. So, Mr. Schweitzer is in front of us. First, if you look through your packet, the second piece of your packet is the presentation on the House budget, which we need to pass our recommendation, and that'll move forward to the state government finance committee. Representative Schweitzer, welcome back to the committee. If you could state your name for the record and walk us through the House budget.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Paul Schweitzer, House Controller, not Representative Schweitzer.
Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry for the demotion. Go ahead.
Thank you, members of the committee. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, you should have in your packet a cover letter, a proposed budget, and then a description of what's in the budget. But before I get to that, and also some charts in there, but before I get to that, just a few general comments about House funding overview over the past years and how we've fared compared to the general fund and how we've compared to the executive branch. Of course, we are a significant part of the legislative branch. Over 60% of the House compared to the entire legislative branch, but we are by far the smallest of the three branches of government, and so for that reason, some of my comments will compare us to the executive branch. But first of all, compared to our 07-08 in terms of what we do as a legislature, in 07-08 we had 4,259 bills were introduced in the House. Of those, 370 were presented to the governor for signature. That compares to 2 years previous when only 291 bills were presented to the governor for signing. That's an important part of what we do, and it did show a marked increase from the previous biennium. In your packet, there's a chart also that kind of shows how we do what we do in terms of our House budget. Please note that when you look at the permanent staffing, temporary staffing, and member costs, that 92% of our House budget are spent on member and staff salaries, benefits, and related expenses. So that's important as we try to consider what to do for our House budget over the next biennium. Again, I'm jumping on a little bit, but these I think are important facts to sort of keep in mind as our background. The general fund increase, as I said, has increased about 50% since 1998, but state government funding and the Minnesota House in particular have not kept up with that. While our funding, state government funding, has remained generally flat over that 10-year time period, while the general fund has increased. So as a result of those facts, results of the House funding flat, general fund having increased, the net result is that our percentage of the general fund has been reduced about 20% compared to 8 years ago. We're at the House fund. The House represents 0.18% of the general fund. It had been as high as 0.23% of the general fund. So I mentioned that just to give, again, some context for we are really a very small piece of the overall puzzle. But yet, even with that, the appropriation to the legislative branch really hasn't kept up with the executive branch. For example, we're the smallest unit of the state government in terms of the branches of government, which makes when we don't get the increases that others have gotten, it has big impact on our fairly small agency. Our health staffing, as reflected by FTE data, has decreased 5.5% over about the past 5 years. Compared to the executive branch, their FTE staffing has increased about 1.4%, a modest increase, because they are certainly doing what they can to hold down spending. But again, executive branch FTE increased last 5 years. Legislative branch FTE decreased by 5.5%. So keeping those factors in mind, it makes it difficult for us to continue taking reductions compared to the other branches of government. I think it's fair to say we have done more than our fair share over the past 10 years. If you're concerned going back 5 years isn't long enough, that perhaps I'm skewing the data. Well, if you go back 10 years, the same trend emerges. From 2001 to 2008, staffing in the executive branch did decrease by about 1.1%. Over the same time period, staffing in the Minnesota House of Representatives fell by 9%. So again, significant difference compared to what we've done compared to the other branches of government, partly because we're totally reliant on the general fund, whereas executive branch, other branches of government have other funds that they can rely on to bolster themselves during difficult time periods. If I'll turn now to highlight some of the points in the cover letter, chair members of the committee again. So to respond to this, you'll see the chart in the back, which talks about some of those facts I mentioned about our permanent FTE staffing going down. The chart in back shows we were at a high of around 280 full-time funded staff positions back in around 2001. When we went through our budget reductions around 2003, that number dropped to about 248, 250 or so. There's been a slight increase over time in that amount, up to around 253. 253 is what our funding was. Two years ago when I came before you, we were looking at funding for 253 positions. Today, the funding request to you will be for funding approximately 235 positions, and that's reflected on that chart. I'm happy to say we're not talking about laying off any permanent current staff. This is based on our holding positions vacant over the past year or so. We now have 18 positions vacant. This budget expects that those positions will not be filled because they're not funded in this budget. If I can turn back to highlight some items on the front page. Again, in FY09, we absorbed funding reductions of about $1.7 million, which was 5% of our FY09 appropriation. Of that, 2.8% was a base cut. This next biennium for 10-11 reflects an additional $1.8 million budget reduction. This is a 3% reduction to our base budget. Plus the 2.8% earlier, well over almost a 6% reduction. Again, going back historically, the FY11 appropriation request is $378,000 below the original FY03 appropriation approved by this committee. In other words, over an 8-year time period, our actual dollar amount that we're requesting for the general fund is actually below the amount requested by this by the letters and appropriated by the legislature in fiscal year 03. Managing these budget reductions is a difficult task, and that the key step is in holding a permanent position vacant. That those 18 positions that I mentioned represent about 7% of our our workforce, of our reduction in force that will be funding. Some of the increases, of course, that we have reflected in here are due to things that we can't do much about. Obviously, the number of House members remains at 134. We also have increases to our insurance costs for members and members and staff that we can do very little about, at least in the short term. Some of the other budget reductions are shown on the handout for 10-11, things that we'll try to do to maintain our operations as best we can. I already mentioned staffing levels, but staff salary, unfortunately, there is no money in the budget, in this proposed budget to you, for staff salary increases of any kind during the entire next biennium of FY 10 and 11. Temporary staffing is maintained approximately at current levels. Redistricting, we all know that there will be additional pressures on us as we move to redistricting. There is no money and no staff positions in this budget for redistricting staff for each, for either of the caucuses. Our equipment expenditures are reduced significantly from previous years. Many expenses are pushed off into future biennials. Out of state travel is the cost of transportation and lodging are eliminated from this budget. Year-round lodging for members is restricted to the first year of the biennium only. I think I mentioned member and staff insurance cost increases of about 6% per calendar year are built into this budget. Salaries for legislators. No pay increase for legislators is included in this budget. As you all know, I'm sure legislator salaries have not increased since 1999. In order to make this budget work with these significant reductions that we're taking and to avoid laying off permanent staff, we are counting on our fund balance to get us through these next 2 years. But we will use a significant part of our fund balance and to spend to partially spend that down, but still retain a significant amount for emergencies. Voluntary leave of absences we're counting on those to be continued in this budget. We're counting on those as increases. And various cost efficiencies are also expected in this budget. Finally, this budget assumes that the Department of Administration will continue to pay for the rent costs for this building. The governor, in his request, recommended for the first time that he basically took an additional 0.8%, almost a 1% reduction to our appropriation, shifted it to the Department of Administration to help pay what he called a in lieu of rent offset. That is only a partial offset, and that. This budget assumes that that our appropriation will not be reduced to pay for administration costs of operating the building. They have historically they have paid for all the costs of operating the building. If other agencies were to receive a big increase in their rent by their landlord, what they would do in the executive branch is they would give them a base level, a change level to their base to help them pay for their rent costs. In this case, the executive branch did the opposite to us. They took away money from us and gave it to admin to pay for their costs because they didn't want they wanted to come in and show a reduction into their budget at our expense, if I may add. And the line item budget is shown on page 2. The second page of your handout, where it shows the details by expenditure type, broken down by fiscal year, and by the proposed funding. You'll see that the funding request that I mentioned is at a 3% reduction, is a funding level of $29,940,000 for each fiscal year, which is below our expenses, but again, will make up the difference using our fund balance. Mr. Chair, members, I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have.
Thank you. First, Representative Seifert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Schweitzer, if you look at page 2 of the handout on the line items, under member salaries, which is the first line item that you look at, we have a fixed number of lawmakers, 134 of us on the House side. I assume that we are not changing the size of the legislature, and we're also assuming that our salaries don't change either. You have per diem listed in the second column, and you have benefits listed under a separate line item. Why is there a $400,000 variation from 08 to 09, and then another $300,000, and then another $400,000? If we have a fixed number of lawmakers, and per diem is on a separate line item, and insurance is on a separate line item, and our salary isn't changing, wouldn't that be exactly the same from 08 through 11?
Mr. Spencer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, member session per diem is subject to retirement. So interim per diem is not subject to retirement deduction. So our accounting system includes session per diem along with salary. So the short answer to your question, Representative Seifert, is that the member's salary line item includes not only the salary, but also includes session per diem payments.
Representative Seifert.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Second question, Mr. Schweitzer, maybe this is for the chairman. When I chaired state government, we put into our bill that session would start, that would have been in the 06 session on March 1st, which we did start that year. And the reason we bumped it from about February 10th to March 1st is we were able to save 3.5 weeks worth of session per diem, session LAs, session temp staff, and some, at that point, lodging, although I don't think that'd be a savings now, and travel back and forth from members' district for the rural members. Do we have an assumption of when the 2010 session would start for the purpose of this budget?
Not yet. That would be something we'd need to discuss with the Senate as well, so I think that would be a discussion for down the road, and in this budget, that assumption is not made.
Okay.
Okay,
thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schweitzer, if you could prepare a document for the Rules Committee to look at on what 1 week worth of session costs with an assumption of the regular amount of temp staff, temp LAs, travel back and forth from members' districts and session per diem. I know we have talked informally with the Speaker's office about, you know, potentially being able to have important committees come in using the committee budgets for per diem and mileage potentially and so forth, but if you could give us an idea, I think that might help us as a committee to give a recommendation to leadership about that. Mr. Chair, I just have one more question then.
Go ahead, Representative Tucker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last question, Mr. Schweitzer, and this may not be for you, it might be for public information, but a few weeks ago we had the announcement of the Green Books and the Red Books being published, and we worked on this when I chaired State Gov Finance about combining publications, and I don't care if we have a Green Book or a Red Book, but in these times of emergency situations with our budget, I still think it looks wasteful for us to have a Green Book come out and then 3 weeks later a Red Book with the same information to come out, plus the House rules and the Senate rules and joint rules included in them. And I'm wondering, is this the opportune time for us to combine those publications for the next biennium? When I sent the email out, I did have bipartisan emails back saying a lot of members felt this was the time for us to pursue this as a Rules Committee to combine those publications. Maybe we just have a Red Book and we publish more of them, or we publish just a Green Book, or we come up with a new, I don't know what you get when you combine blue and green. So we could come up with a new, you know, color. But I think it does lend itself that in the budget times that we are, it wastes paper, and I think it would show that we as a legislature want to grind out every efficiency that we can and still serve the public. Do you know if there's been any movement toward doing that for the next grouping of publications?
Representative Seifert, before Mr. Schweitzer answers the question, just let the record know that there were members to the right of me that knew what red and green combined.
My kindergartner probably knows that, but I just couldn't remember.
I keep demoting you. House Controller Schweitzer.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this budget does assume that we'll continue the Red Book and Green Book printing. In both cases, both contracts are joint with with the House and Senate, pretty much set for the current biennium. But for the next biennium, that is something that the legislature could do. The green book printing, we considered reducing the number of green books, but it turns out that, of course, if you have fewer of those nice little books to hand out, what happens is staff then people still want the information about what committees are meeting, how many members do we have, what the telephone numbers are, and what happens is they have an alternate document that they print out in house 8.5 by 11 with the same information on it. But unfortunately, we get such a good price with the green books that it doesn't really save. It doesn't save a significant money, in fact, because of the cost of reproducing the documents, and we're able to get them much cheaper. The red books are more expensive than the green books. There's a lot more to them. The red books also include the permit rules of the House, and it serves as sort of a permanent record for the legislature over the years. I know, as you said, Reverend Seifert, that back in 2001, 2003, we looked at combining those documents of some sort, but really no consensus and no better option really emerged, because what we have is we have an extensive book, the red book, but we don't print very many copies of it. The smaller, inexpensive document, the green book, we're able to get it out faster. Get it out to the public while committees are still operating and while they can still use it, and it's fairly inexpensive, but we print a lot of them. So we have looked at that, but we haven't come up with anything that would be a significant cost saving.
Can I have a follow-up just real quick?
Sure.
Sorry, I'm dominating too much time, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schweitzer, the other thing we had talked about, and I know Wisconsin and I believe Wyoming do this as well, about seeking sponsorship at the end of the book, three or four pages, the lobbying organizations, the government relations council types, essentially pay off the cost of the books and get some advertising for the last three pages, which really I don't know if people pay much attention to. Certainly, you know, for members who want to get a hold of people, it's helpful. Is that against the law for us to do that? Are we afraid there's inappropriate sponsorship? I think there's quite a few states that do that. We talked about that in 05 as well, but I don't know if there was ever any pursuit of it.
Mr. Chair, I don't think I'm the right person to answer that question. Very, very LaGrave could, I'm sure, offer a valid opinion on that.
All right. Come on down and identify yourself for the committee, and you can answer Representative Seifert's question.
Mr. Chair, members, Barry LaGrave, Director of Health Public Information Services. We have not pursued the advertising in the green and the red books. Again, as Mr. Schweitzer said, it's a joint publication, so it takes some work with the Senate. Along those same lines, we do receive for Session Weekly voluntary donations. So we're sort of going toward that way to help support the printing and mailing of Session Weekly. In less than the last year, we've received about $4,500 in voluntary donations for the printing and mailing of Session Weekly. That's actually an increase over the previous full year. And we have plans to increase the announcements about the option for doing voluntary donations. So we are taking steps along that road with some of the printing. Have not done that with the green and the red books. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Schweitzer, you may have answered my question with a question Representative Seifert had, but on the spreadsheet for members per diem, in 08 it's almost $225,000, and then in 09 it's $116,000. It just seems to me it would be more in 09 because we're here much longer, but is that because of how you do that with the salary?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, how is it exactly? That line only reflects interim per diem. The session per diem is included in the member salary line. Right. You're correct.
That's Ms. Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple questions about the line items. Under travel, under the category total salaries and benefits, I guess I'm surprised that even with implementing a no out-of-state travel policy, that it only reduces the total by less than a third. I guess I'm surprised by that. any comment there about what our typical travel expenses are? I would have thought it would have been a bit of savings by zeroing out of state travel.
Mr. Fletcher.
Yeah, I'm Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Currently, at a current policy and past policy has been that the speaker's approval is required for every item of out of state travel, which is a difficult thing for the speaker's office to do but they have all done that and exercised restraint historically on the amounts of member and staff out of state travel. So yes, it is a fairly small saving, but because there simply hasn't been that much out of state travel.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one other question I had. In that same category of expenses, what are other supplies?
Sure.
It's not office supplies, because that's two entries up. I'm just getting it.
Mr. Schweitzer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, under other supplies, it's kind of a miscellaneous hodgepodge of items. It would include some things like signage in the state office building, electrical supplies that might be needed to fix various things around the place. It would include photo supplies for house photography, printing film, paper like that, books, things like books and publications, house research, many others have very important books and publications that they need, as well as some news. We've restricted the number of newspapers in the past, each caucus does get a couple of the local newspapers, and those are that's the bulk of it. But of the budget amounts, books makes up the largest portion of that.
Representative Gunther.
Mr. Chairman, excuse my cold, but I saw that they are saving some money by coming out with some big green books that they claim saves them a lot of money. So I wanted to get 20 of them for a group. They gave me some great big ones that size. They claim they save a lot of money. So they're working on saving money.
That's it, Hoppy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Schweitzer, I apologize. I can't remember. Where does postage fit in on the spreadsheet?
Mr. Schweitzer.
Mr. Chair, members, postage would fit in under other communications.
Thank you.
S.M. Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to thank you, Mr. Schweitzer. As you were talking to us about the trends over the last number of years and how much we've asked you to do over time, I couldn't help but notice the restraint in your voice over doing something that's difficult. And I think one of the things that is important to me as we move forward through the session and do what we have to do to balance the budget, that we have to, you know, offer witness to what this represents, and this represents, you know, humans behind this. Folks are going to have to work longer and harder, and a number of people are going to be out of work. And I don't think that we should let these meetings pass without acknowledging that. So I want to thank you for bringing this, for sharing the information that's difficult, and making us clearly aware of the ramifications of our actions today. So we have to do them. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any additional questions on the House budget? Representative Western.
Mr. Chair, two questions. I'll merge them into one. The cost of the Green Book and the Red Book combined, or specifically, can you break that down? What would donations raise if we had sponsorships? What kind of money are we talking? We'd have to raise to mitigate those costs. Secondly, this might be more of a question for you, Mr. Chair, but with the housing issue and only through the 2010 session, if a member or a few members wanted to give up or merge their housing apartment, likely, throughout this year in attempts to save those dollars, same amount of dollars, but save them for next year. Is that a possibility or something that the Rules Committee has ever considered, Mr. Chair, giving members a place to keep their furniture or their stuff if they come down for meetings, but if some of us wanted to room with one or two other members and share an apartment and keep that throughout the 2 years, it's probably I would anticipate a cost-neutral event at best, but has there been any discussions of that?
I'll let Mr. Schweitzer answer the first part first about the cleaning in the red books. Mr. Schweitzer?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the biennium, like I said, out of our approximately $30 million budget, the cost for our printing of our red and green books is $17,215. We need to raise $17,215 in order to balance out that cost.
And that's on restroom to your question about housing. Many members already do double up where they live to save money and don't take the full amount, which is appreciated currently within our budget. And those assumptions are already built into the building of our house budget. We make assumptions on how much members collect in per diem. As many of you know, most of the members on this committee, at least, take the full amount or higher than it was a few years ago. So those assumptions are already built in, just like housing assumptions are built in. I know many rural members who, gentlemen, if you could, please. Thank you. That's okay. There are many members that I know already who share savings by sharing housing right now and don't take the full amount of your own housing. All of those assumptions are built into the budget and those savings are already accounted for. So I don't believe you would see a cost-neutral savings. Be happy to discuss this further down the road, but as for right now, the housing will be, if this budget moves forward as it is, the housing will be ending for members at the end of the session. Any further questions on the budget? Yeah, the end of the next session, yes. That's the biennium session. When we go signee die in the second year. Mr. Schweitzer.
Mr. Chair, either for you or Mr. Schweitzer, on the staffing level for the elimination or holding of 18 permanent FTEs, is that assuming spread across health research, GOP caucus, DFL caucus, supply, the whole nine yards, or is it as they come up, one, if we have more people that resign versus you, or how is that determined?
Our friend Seifert, it is across all the different areas, and we do have hiring restrictions right now, and there have been individuals who have left even since since the past election. We have not filled any of those positions, so we are much like I've heard many other agencies are, but we are definitely have very strict hiring restrictions right now.
Mr. Chair, to that point, our caucus has utilized salary savings leave quite heavily. I think we're 16% of the FTEs in the building, but I think we're about 21 or 24% of salary savings leave. Is there anything assumed for salary savings right now, or is it just that will get built into the budget as people take it?
Mr. Schweitzer.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Schieffer, we have the budget assumes a significant amount of salary savings leave in each year. So yes, we're counting on the continuation of that, although at a little bit lower level than we have in the past. Partly because with a 7% reduction in our staffing, we can't count on the same number on the same dollar amount of salary savings leave. We'll have fewer people, fewer people eligible to take it, and also I think you might find that departments may be less willing to grant salary savings leave when your staffing levels are reduced significantly. The budget does include salary savings leave of $120,000 in each fiscal year. $240,000 are assumed for the biennium in salary savings leave. That money is already taken out of the budget.
Mr. Lester.
Mr. Chair, another issue with the back in 03, I noticed they had gotten rid of most, if not all, of those water coolers that we have around on different floors. What I was told is they put a filter in the fridge lounge on each floor for people to get water out of. We've now got them back. What do they cost us? Do we own those dispensers? Do we rent them all? And I say this at the parody of having a cooler outside my office, and I enjoy it, but what are we paying for that? What kind of cost is that for us in the house?
And I'll have a question on paper clips after this, right, Mr. Schweitzer. Mr. Schweitzer.
Mr. Chair, members, on water and coolers, I can say that, yes, we now own those water coolers. They're a fairly small small investment, but it was less expensive to buy them rather than to lease them. We do buy water. As you mentioned, back in 03, we did some. We tried restricting the amount of water that was being purchased in the building. Now, my recollection is that we spend. Although I'd like to double check this, I think it's around $9,000 on providing healthy drinking water for our House employees, members of the public, and state representatives.
Okay. Members, before I make the motion to approve this proposed budget, I want to thank Mr. Schweitzer and our staff. We sometimes, I think, tend to personalize our House budget as to ourselves and the folks that work around here, but I think we have to remember that the very purpose of us is to serve the public and Minnesotans across the state. And as you've seen, the significant cuts to our staff, when it hurts them and us, it actually hurts our ability to do the good work that people send us down here to do as one branch of government. We've been doing more with less over many years now, and as you've seen with the reductions already made this year, this will be an approximately 6% reduction in the House budget, with 18 positions left open, which is much lower than it's been in years previous. And then just once again to reiterate this point, going back 8 years, we're actually requesting less funding than 8 years ago, and this proposed budget is over $375,000 less. So we're tightening our belt as best we can, but we do so at the peril of representing those tens of thousands of Minnesotans each, and then collectively the millions of Minnesotans that expect us to do the work. So with that, I just want to appreciate the work of Mr. Schweitzer and our staff and members for all sharing in this responsibility of this budget, and I will move the proposed budget for the year 2010 and 11 and send it to the State Government Finance Division. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Thank you, members. Thank you, Mr. Schweitzer. Members, now we're going to go back and discuss the House legal fees. We have House policy that pays for legal fees within a certain percentage and pays the hourly rate for them. And if you look at in your packet, the next portion of your packet is from Mr. Schweitzer and deals with the legal fees for recounts. Mr. Schweitzer, can you walk us through this packet, please?
Certainly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, this is for automatic recount. Under the House policy, it says that the Rules Committee may authorize payment to attorneys for House members who are involved in automatic recounts. This year, or in the 2008 election, there were two such elections where the number of votes between the two candidates was fell within the statutory requirements of the of that legal recount that was under Minnesota statutes 204C.35's automatic recount was less than 0.5% of the total votes counted. The two recounts were held in 12B and 16A. Attorneys for both sides. In the 12B account, the firm of Weinblatt and Gaylord, the amount requested is $7,211.51. for Lockwood Grindle, known PLLP. The amount requested is $14,202.87. For the District 16A election, for the same two law firms are requesting reimbursements of $7,226.50 and $8,289.66. Those amounts have been reduced to reflect the health policy of paying no more than $200 per hour for the attorney. Mr. Chair, as I mentioned in an email, I make no recommendations to the committee on these amounts. I'm forwarding this information for this committee to decide. I say that because I really wasn't involved in these in any way. No contract. This matter of the caucuses operates this as has been historical practice for about the last 10 years.
Any questions on legal fees? I guess I actually do have one reference cipher. You'd probably be best as minority leader to answer the question. Generally, when we do these, they're very similar as far as the amount of time and funding put in place. If I look in District 16A, the amount is somewhat similar with the Republican side, $1,000 more, but there's quite a large discrepancy in how much money we'll be spending here between the 12B race, with the Republican spending twice as much money as the Democrats. Representative Secker, can you comment at all about this and why the number is so large? I mean, clearly I can see it's many more hours work, but to have twice as much, it seems fairly significant. I'm wondering if you could help the committee understand that.
Mr. Chair, I don't really have a good answer for you. I noticed that myself as a question that is worth asking, although I know when these legal challenges come up, they probably did more of an analysis on ballots or something. Obviously, there were 64 hours put in by the first attorney, and the other side there was 12. But I don't know the answer on that one. I can certainly try to find out what the situation is with that.
Mr. Chair,
that's over.
What is the time frame for paying this particular bill?
President Solberg, we've generally tried to pay the bills in a timely fashion. We did have to wait a bit because many folks did do a job reducing their rates over time, and you're seeing reduced numbers right now, even though there's a significant difference on that first line item. We'd like to pay these as soon as possible, but there is no hard and fast deadline. I didn't see any bill that said pay by date or or anything, but as soon as possible, it's not over.
Well, Mr. Chair, it seems to me that when there's that huge discrepancy, that we should at least have some opportunity for someone to ask the question, and I would think that we should bring this up on the next meeting then, as a suggestion.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a good suggestion, and maybe we could approve the second one since they're pretty close, but I think the top one, there's a legitimate question, and we could contact the Lockridge firm and maybe have them come in. I don't want to hold off on them paying their bill. They have to meet their payroll and so forth, but I guess I would be very open to maybe we approve the second one and bring that first one back and try to find out what happened there.
Mr. Chair, who actually is responsible for reviewing the invoices from the firm and making any kind of suggestion as to changes in hours or kind of a write-down?
I believe it's the caucus. The caucuses do so individually. Mr. Schweitzer does not get involved in that.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, this would kind of be a chance of the Republican caucus then to review this particular bill and see if there's anything that's out of line. Okay.
Yes, Representative, that is correct. Representative Cypress, do you believe you could probably get this done within the week here? We're going to have another Rules Committee meeting. Great. So we will move past those two resolutions. We do them individually, members. So I will move the 2009 Kulik Jackson resolution on payment of legal fees. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. And then members of Seifert will move the 2009 Erickson motion on payment of legal fees. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails.
Mr. Chair.
That's over.
But as I look at these, the DOTI fee is within line as well with them, would it be good for us to at least pay that legal fee as well and just hold off on the one? Or should we wait to do both of them together in that particular rate?
We should probably, I think fair is fair that we should just hold off on that race and then get a sense of where folks are at.
Okay.
Members, we have one more item added. The conference committee wrapped up on the on House File 392, and you have that before you. That's the conference committee on tax conformity and green acres, and we should set some tagging guidelines on this, I believe. Members, over the course of the last 3 months, we've heard many speeches on green acres. This is a report I think that is signed off by all five conferees on both sides and has significant work on it, so I'm hoping that we could agree upon some parameters to get this bill to the governor, since we know how important the changes are in green acres and tax conformity. They're both timely issues, so perhaps we could set some guideline here that will get the bill to the governor sooner rather than later. And I'm proposing a half hour time guideline on the conference committee reports, unless Representative Seifert thinks there needs to be less time on it. Representative Seifert?
Mr. Chair, I'm just looking at the bill and the kind of the details and the changes on the ag land classifications. How long will it take Representative Lincheski to go through this with members on how what the changes are and so forth? It looks like there's quite a few. There might be a few questions raised as to how constituents are impacted. I'm not sure half an hour is going to do it, but it depends on her explanation or how detailed it is. I don't think I will have any questions, but I don't want to snuff out any members' questions. There's a lot of people watching this on television probably wondering what all the changes might be.
And Representative Seifert, I do know that your conferee spent time with your caucus discussing this issue as well, so I'm hopeful that some of this doesn't have to happen to get members up to speed. This conference committee closed last week, and there's been great opportunity for members to read through this bill. This should not be the first time members have seen this conference committee report. That's Tim Rustrom.
Mr. Chair, it is actually. I haven't had a chance to read through it. I would guess I'm maybe not alone. Just how significant a reform did they do to the green acres? I guess that's probably the issue, I would say, and a half hour does seem low to me, but did they do a full repeal? If that's the case, I'd say a half hour is probably fine.
Well, I'm rushed, and I know they did not do a full repeal, though you will have the opportunity to look over these changes between now and the floor. It is 10:30 right now. It's not like on the floor is your first opportunity to ask questions. I know that
right.
Many of our staff will be available between now and then to answer any questions privately that you may have. And actually, Representative Demmer might be a good first person to go to, as he was a conferee that has signed off on this on these changes. Representative Westrum.
Right. Okay. Well, that's you partly answered the question. I think a half hour is a little light, but I guess it seems to me it might take 15 minutes or longer just to explain the bill.
Okay. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, is there a summary presented already?
There is
a summary.
There is, Representative Detmer. Yes. Okay. I'm going to propose the half hour. Any further discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No aye.
Motion prevails. Thank you, members. We're adjourned.